Good afternoon, and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. We are in studio this week with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones and Kim Skaggs. Welcome to the show, Lori Beth.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
And welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Shelley. I am also glad to be here with you two. Two of my favorite people.
Awesome. Well, feelings mutual there. We're excited to have you on the show with us again, Kim. I know you've been on here before, and we certainly enjoy the insight and the depth and the spiritual perspective that you bring to leadership and to, well, just about everything we talk about around this place. So we're delighted to have you today, and we just want to jump in thanking you, Lori Beth, for writing this book and bringing it to us, this fruitful words of spiritpreneurship out of Jesus Entrepreneur. This week we are looking at how the Omega Leader surrenders and how to not fix what is not broken. So we're excited to jump into those topics and learn more from you and your wisdom in writing these messages to us. So thank you both. And we'll just jump in right here. Lori, talk to us a little bit about this word. We haven't really tapped it too much in the last shows on spiritpreneur. Define for us again what a spiritpreneur is.
A spiritpreneur is someone who can answer yes to these three questions. Number one, am I doing work that honors God? Number two, am I doing work that honors me, my gifts, and my talents? And number three, am I making a living full-time doing all of the above?
And I'm guessing that you're going to say yes to all three of those.
I am blessed to be able to say yes.
How about you, Kim? Can you say yes to all those?
For the first time in my life, I can.
Wow. Yay!
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think I can say yes to that as well. Although there are days that I wish that that I had more of a living coming in, doing the things that I love to do, but it's always a great space to think about entrepreneurship and spiritpreneurship inside this container, Lori Beth, that you call the Omega Leader. And each time that we gather and we learn about this process and these principles that you write about and that you teach about, there is this depth and this power and this insight that comes, I believe, to each of us that are looking how to go deeper into this spiritpreneur place where we're doing what we love, we're honoring God, and we're making a living way while doing that. So thank you for pinning that phrase and those words. We're going to jump into this first topic, He Surrendered. It's kind of a sticky topic in our society today to think about surrender. I can't imagine Steve Jobs surrendering his post or surrendering his position right now. And so talk to us a little bit about that word surrender from a relational perspective, maybe a little bit, from a professional and maybe then a ministerial perspective in light of leadership.
Well, it's a word that in our culture, in the American culture, the Western culture, and certainly in the Texas culture, we never want to hear, or we want to hear it, but we never want to say it, which is, I surrender. And, you know, I grew up hearing the battle cry of the Alamo, never give up, never surrender. So there's something in us, which you could call it patriotism, you could call it pride, you could call it tribal awareness, ego, and sometimes it's courage, but quite often it masks itself as bravado, which underneath is really the ego saying, I want to hold on to what I know. I want to do it my way, my way or the highway. And as I went on a tour of the Holy Land and I observed the many sites there, the place where Mary surrendered her body to the Holy Spirit so she could bear Jesus into the world, the place where the little boy gave up his lunch so Jesus could feed 5,000, the place where Abraham offered up Isaac, the cave where Jesus was held the night before his crucifixion. And I physically went to each of these sites, and I was overwhelmed with the history and the spiritual significance of this land and these places. And then I compared it to the places in the United States, the tours I had been on, the world's tallest building, where are the celebrities, world's biggest that, best that, and or the battles. In our country, we celebrate sometimes where battles were fought. And I thought how different it is in the Holy Land. People have come, pilgrims have come from all three religions, or three major religions, for thousands of years. And what draws them is very different from what draws Americans on tour. And as I thought about it, all the places that I visited in the Holy Land had one thing in common, and it was this. It was where one person surrendered everything he or she had to God. You want my body, I give you my body. You want my sandwich, I give you my sandwich. You want my son, I give you my son. You want my life, I give you my life. And so it struck me that in God's kingdom, the only path to victory lies in surrender.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to chew on that for a second. That's a mouthful of surrender. Kim, what are your thoughts about this? Into your hands, I commit my spirit. This topic around surrender.
God's kingdom lies in surrender. You're talking to a double fire here, who doesn't even like to utter the word surrender, much less do it. And unless it is, within the context of some enemy or circumstance, surrendering to me. But truthfully, the concept of surrender, I think, has gotten a bad rap. It's like the word meekness. When we think about meekness, we think about it as a liability. When in fact, meekness is a tremendous, powerful strength. And Webster's defines it, I thought this was so cool, as humility and forbearance under injury or provocation.
Mm.
In other words, meek people have the ability to not react and respond in anger or in revenge. Wow, what a strength that is. And it's like meekness is self-control epitomized. And such as it is with surrender, it means to give up in favor of another or for a higher purpose. And, Lori Beth, the examples you just used of Mary surrendering to the will of God, resulting in the birth of Jesus, or Peter leaving a lucrative fishing business to surrender to the cry of his heart and the call on his life, or the little boy surrendering his lunch. While at the onset, all of these situations may have appeared to initially be points of loss, look at the fruits or the results of their surrender.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Preach it, sister.
A savior to the world, an apostle's message preached for century upon century, and a multitude who had to have walked away in awe at the multiplication before their very eyes of a two-piece fish dinner.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of changing the way we perceive surrender. If we see it as a loss of control, we will recoil from it in any form. But as you wrote so succinctly in this book, control is an illusion.
Hmm. Well, and I'm thinking of so many things, Kim. I can tell you really are especially anointed today with this message. Okay, here's a topic for thought. Does a raindrop lose its power by surrendering to the ocean, or does it gain power?
Mm.
And really, we're all little raindrops of God. And so when we surrender, we give up this illusion of, a drop of water, and then surrender into the fullness that already is, and there's the power, there's the release, like you're saying, there's the glory on the other side of that. It's so beautiful. I mean, this very chapter has become one of my signature stories, because whenever I speak about it, people resonate.
Sure.
sure. with it. And I remember, and I share in this chapter, I was in Chicago, and I saw one of the CEOs of this, one of the biggest publicly traded companies in the world, and he was on his way into a meeting, and he stopped and asked about my trip to the Holy Land, because we had shared about that. And so I told him what I knew about surrender, and he just put his head down for a minute, and he said, wow, he said, I really needed to hear that. He said, I was just getting ready to go in and tell our sales team that we needed to go for the jugulars of our competition, the jugular vein. And so in business, which is so competitive, and, you know, eat their lunch and get your competitors before they get you and all, it is that tightrope balance we walk of surrendering. And I think it might be easier, in fact, maybe it's too easy for women to surrender, and I think it's harder, I think, culturally for men to surrender, and yet it's the essence of surrendering to God. Whatever is mine is thou's.
Yes.
And I was thinking, as both of you were talking about the four elements, elementally, surrender would fall into what category, ladies?
Wind, water, the easiest to surrender. Mm-hmm. Fire doesn't want to surrender. It'll die. It'll lick the last gasp of whatever is there.
Mm-hmm.
And earth is so solid that if it does surrender, it's invisible.
So I was thinking about this from a leadership or a professional, you know, you're in a job, you're in an office, you're on a team, you're at work, or in relationship with someone and they challenge you to surrender, to throw down the flag. But elementally, what do we want to do?
Draw a line in the sand and heat it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, and sometimes we even pick up the line and we move it closer to us, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't say anything. We just move the line or whatever. And so in this dialogue of looking at an Omega leader, how an Omega leader would lead or teach surrender or model surrender, talk to us about that just for a few minutes, Lori, because elementally – sometimes that's not a match. So what do you do? Kim and I are fires. You're a fire. How likely is it that we're going to, you know, first think about surrender?
Well, it could be if you're talking elementally, does a fire in surrendering to another fire extinguish itself or grow stronger?
Question.
So, you know, so much of it is communications, and we teach elemental communication, and fires really love to hear the word, you're right, you were right. And man, that's just as hard for a fire to say as I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I'm thinking of the New Adventures of Old Christine TV show, which tickles me all the time, and she said her brother was teaching her, coaching her about dates, because she doesn't usually get asked on the second date or third date. And she said, well, like, you know, the other day he just said, I love you. And her brother said, and what did you say back? And she said, I bet you do. He said, no wonder they don't ask you out again. So it's really the meekness and the humility, the meekness. You gave such a beautiful definition of that.
Yes.
Of that word, do we know it when we see it, and do we appreciate it when we see it?
Right.
And, you know, beggars, I remember being in front of the Vatican and walking along and seeing this woman who was so bent over. She was on her knees with her nose touching the ground, and she had her hands extended in an empty cup. And, I mean, it just did me in. For one thing, she's there in front of the richest, one of the richest churches in the world. But the other thing was, she couldn't get any lower. Physically. She could not get any lower than where she was. And she was totally dependent on the mercy of the people who walked by. And that's quite a stance for us to be with Christ. You know, to be in Christ, that the lowest, like, I have nothing, Lord. I have nothing but you. And what the inclination of Christ when he saw people like that was lifted them up, rise, you know, stand up. Where are your condemners? Go and walk and walk. So this this whole notion of surrender, it's a lifetime study, really.
Right, right. Any other thoughts, Kim, from you?
I so agree. I see surrender as the ultimate act of humility. You know, and humility, I believe, is the most empowering characteristic Christ had and that we can emulate. But you do have to grow in it.
Yeah, it doesn't come natural in our DNA.
No, it does not. No.
No.
And I think it starts with just, you know, as Mary said, be it unto me, Lord, according to your word.
That segues us to a next chapter that we want to talk about in this Jesus Entrepreneur, Lori Beth. He knew you can't fix what isn't broken. Talk to us about your concepts behind this chapter.
Well, the notion of concept of fixing what isn't broken. You know, there's a statement that says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Spiritualpreneurs, I mean, in rereading this chapter, it just got me. This is really the way we think. There's two voices that are constantly in our ear. One is, I can do better next time. You know, this was not perfect. This was a little broken in my speech or in my presentation. You know, that drive for perfection. And then the other voice is saying, I can certainly do it better than they can. You know, so... that sense of brokenness, there's in the perfectionist, there's the driver force of us, and then there's also the sense of, you know, you see systems that are broken. Today I was driving and I was almost cut off in traffic by a big truck, and it was a moving truck. Two men will move you. And I know the story of the woman who started that company, and you know, she was a secretary in a moving company, and nobody was paying attention to her, and she practically ran the company for 20 years, was never getting promoted, and finally decided to take her $5,000 in savings, start her own company. She went out and bought a truck, got her sons, and started moving. Maybe it's two sons, we'll move you. But anyway, she saw something that was broken. What was broken was she was not being respected in her workplace. That was broken. And the other thing she saw was broken was that moving trucks were too expensive, the big chain trucks and, you know, the big name trucks, they charged a fortune. And so she said, there's a niche here for me that I can do with the resources that I have, which was $5,000 and two strong sons. And she started a huge company. So the spiritualpreneur is always looking for what's broken. I tell the story of the founder of Kinko's, who got ticked off when he was standing in line all the time having to make copies, and they were charging a fortune for students to make copies. So he went out and leased a hamburger stand across the street and started selling copies for half the price, and that's how Kinko's was born. It was broken, and they were just taking advantage of students who needed hard copies or Xerox copies. Just kind of in a lighthearted moment, I recently returned from a seminar, and we had people doing their mission statement and their core values. And one woman wrote, I had them take their core value and pin it right above their heart and then present it to the leader of the staff. And so the leader was standing there, and there were 27 people, and there was a woman there. And I don't know how long she'd worked there, maybe 46 years or something. And she came up to the leader, and her core value was humility, but it was covered by two flaps of her sweater. So she walked up to the CEO, and she opened her sweater so that he could receive the word humility, and it looked like she was flashing him. And, I mean, he turned so red, and the group just howled. And then she did it again, and, you know, this was not a young woman, and it was so funny to see her flashing humility before the world. Yeah, I think Jesus has fun with us, and certainly her sense of humor was not broken, no matter what age she was. So Kim, tell us your thoughts on he didn't fix what wasn't broken.
Well, you know, as a coach, and just as a
human being. You know, we want to help.
Are they the
Are they what?
Are they the same?
Hopefully.
Coaches and human beings.
Yeah. Well, we want to help, you know, we want to fix and we want to help and we want to impart to circumstances or situation or the broken people that come to us. You know, as a coach, you know, particularly people who are needing direction or motivation or encouragement. I mean, they're all around us all the time, whether you're a coach or not. But I really related to what you wrote in terms of, you know, all the access we have these days to self-improvement seminars and books and how less than 1 in 100 will make a change, you know, as a result of new information. And just like the story you just shared about the woman who started the moving company, you know, she's 1 in 100.
Right.
And I heard a minister say the other day that there comes a time when you realize that if you want people to change, if you want people to change more than they want to change, there's a problem. Because for all of our passion and our longing and our desire to see people flourish or companies flourish, you know, it does take effort and change. And if people don't want it, they don't want it. It's called free will.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Wow.
Yeah.
Are you finished? You have something else?
Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking about, as you were talking, you know, we could look at all the seven pillars, Laura, your vision of the seven pillars of society and what all those are, business, education, healthcare, government, faith and service organizations, the mass media, the disenfranchised, and we could find something in each of those industries, each of those pillars that are broken. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we teach in the path, particularly with teens, is to look at which pillar is falling. And if you see one of those seven falling, then typically you're being called to lift up that pillar or to be a part of that pillar or fix something that's broken there. Certainly our education system is needing overhauling. Our government is needing overhauling. Our church and faith organizations need a good overhauling. So your question at the end of this book, what opportunities do you see as a result of broken things, broken relationships, broken systems around you? List five. Well, I listed seven.
Yeah.
Okay. And so this chapter, I think, speaks to me in a way of there's always going to be the need in our world to be clear about what you're being called to fix.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if you try to fix something that you're not called to do, that you're not created to do, that you're not, like you said, Kim, passionate to do, mm-hmm. you know, it's just not going to happen. So that kind of struck me as you were talking, Kim, as well.
Well, and in this chapter, we're speaking from Jesus Entrepreneur, about a young man who came up to me after I had given a speech in a college, and he said, "Who are you kidding? We all know in my generation everything's already been done." And I could not believe he thought that or believed that. And where does that come from, that malaise that, mm-hmm. you know, and I kind of jokingly say in the book that I wanted to encounter him in such a way that he felt his life was in danger and suddenly he'd realize something needed to be changed. You know, that he had the power to change something. So I think that spiritualpreneurs wake up every day, particularly fires. You know, we wake up, who can we refine, reform, purify today?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good thing, because if we didn't have problem solvers, if we didn't have people who wanted to make things right, we wouldn't have an economy. And basically our economy is based on people and systems that are trying to fix something that's broken or keep something from being broken.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a world of opportunity there for anybody who wants to make a difference at any level.
Great insight, great insight. Fixing what isn't broken Wow. Do we have anybody doing that, trying to fix things that are not broken?
Well, you could also argue, you know, the notion of original sin versus original blessing.
Mm.
There's a whole theological system.
Wow.
Were we born broken or were we born blessed? Lot of discussion around that topic, and it informs and forms a lot of theological discussion. I remember a young man that I was working with, a child actually. He came home, and his assignment from his particular denominational school was he had to wear a burlap bag with the words "I'm sorry" written on it. He had to wear that for a week, and it was his sorry sack. And I wanted to rip it off of that kid so fast. I mean, he was like 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. You know, what are you sorry for? You're so young. You're so bright, so full of promise. So I'm all for original blessing and that God is calling us to that. Jesus certainly, no one could argue that Jesus has restored us to original blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's another show, right, Kim?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, he said, "I came that you might have life."
Exactly. And have it abundantly.
Yes. Any other thoughts on your side, Kim, on this topic of brokenness?
You know, earlier today I had an opportunity to go get a facial, and it was my first experience with this particular, I think they're called aestheticists. I don't know the technical term for people that give facials, but it's something like that. And as I was laying on the table and she was working on me, she was talking about how she is so blessed because she is able to do what she's passionate about. And these were her words, she has been given the honor of being entrusted with people's faces. And she doesn't take that lightly. She said, "I consider it a high calling."
Wow.
And I thought about that, and I thought, wow. You know, because, you know, when you think about the spiritual parallels, you know, when you think about somebody who gives facials, you wouldn't really think about, you know, all of those associations, the spiritual associations. But she considers this a high and honorable calling, and she is just absolutely thrilled to be able to do what she does. And she said, "The thing is, I get to live my passion." Mm-hmm. And I love running into people like that, you know, because her life was broken and she has fixed what was broken. She wasn't happy being, you know, what she was before. And she stepped into what brought her joy.
Well, she's a spiritrepreneur.
She is, and she exudes it.
That is great.
Well, we've got just a couple of minutes here. Kim, anything happening in your world that you want to tell the listeners about going on for Fusion Coaching? What's happening in your world?
Finally, after several months and many discussions, my website will be up, hopefully, next week. FusionCoaching.net. And just pressing forward with the PATH community, working with Coach Greg Wright on that. That's moving ahead. Had a great call Tuesday night. We are talking for the next several weeks on Jesus in Blue Jeans.
Hmm.
So that's exciting, and we just continue to grow and build that community.
That's great.
Loving it.
Awesome. Well, we're delighted that you were part of the show again today, Kim. Thank you so much. You always bring great insight, and it's fun to connect with you. And thank you, Lori Beth, for sharing with us, for writing this book, for allowing us to dialogue with you around these principles and topics of helping to craft what Omega Leadership looks like.
Yes.
Thank you, Shelley, for your faithfulness in always making sure this show happens no matter where I am or where anybody else is. You carve out the time and produce it. You really are very fruitful in your walk with the Lord.
Mm.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Shelley. Thank you, listeners, for making this an Omega Leader Day.
Awesome. Mm. Everyone, have a good evening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.